You're listening to Insight on Capital Public Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. The cartoons you grew up with and cartoons you still see on TV today came to life with the magic of a legendary animator named Ron Campbell. That list includes The Flintstones, The Jetsons, Scooby-Doo, Yogi Berra, Winnie the Pooh, The Smurfs, The Rugrats, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. There are so many more. And Ron is in Sacramento for a few days this week. Some of his work related to the Beatles' Saturday morning cartoons is for sale. And he stopped by for a visit. Hi, welcome.
Thank you, Beth. Glad to be here.
Great to have you here. Just the mention of these cartoons reaches across many generations. What was the very first that started your career?
I guess it was Popeye, produced by King Features out of New York. They had the rights to Popeye and made Popeye cartoons for very early television, children's television.
What ways were you given assignments compared to you?
Well, it changed over the years. You know, originally I was animating on Popeye. Then I was directing on the Beatles TV cartoon show with a few shows between Popeye and the Beatles cartoon show. Then I came to the United States and I worked for 1 year for Bill Hanna and Joe Barbera. And after that, I went on my own, and I had my own studio and produced shows, directed shows, animated on shows. Everybody needs to understand that all these cartoon films that you were listing earlier were really made by lots and lots of people. I was blessed in my life to be working with some really wonderful, talented people. So it wasn't just me that was responsible for all those shows you were listing there.
Well, I know in many ways you were rewarded for your work, though, with both a Peabody and Emmy Awards and a lot of recognition and really a lot of love. When I think of those cartoons, I smile. What does the work give to you?
Same thing. When we were working on the shows, we were really motivated by providing for our families. We were motivated by the pleasure, the sheer pleasure of drawing. We never did, or at least I never woke up in the morning and say to myself, darn, I got to go to work today. You know, it was always a pleasurable thing to do.
It makes me happy to hear you say that.
Yeah. We did very much enjoy our work. And in the end, though, we were really pleasing ourselves, I guess, in the process, pleasing millions of children.
We have a short clip from the Beatles show to put everybody in the spirit of the Beatles. Let's listen.
Okay. Listen to this, John. According to this book, Madrid is 24 miles in diameter.
Oh, and I feel like I've covered every inch of it.
With those size feet, you practically could.
Very funny.
Okay, I got the spirit. So
yes.
Now you're creating watercolors, correct?
Well, I'm doing paintings based on the television shows that I've worked on or the feature film, The Yellow Submarine, inspired by Chuck Jones, who spent his retirement years doing exactly the same thing. And so when you retire after a 50-year and one-month career, you have to find something to do other than sitting around or playing golf. So I paint, and what I paint is based on the work that I did through my life. And it's received very nicely by people, and so I travel around the country doing a show somewhere in America every month. And this month, we're right here in Sacramento.
And tomorrow happens to be Valentine's Day.
It is, isn't it? I'm glad you reminded me. Dan, I'd better get on the telephone and order some chocolates.
How about a special painting that's titled All You Need Is Love?
Yes, we have a painting titled All You Need Is Love. And if your wife or husband happens to be a crazy Beatles fan, that would be an extraordinary present.
And you are selling your artwork, correct?
That's what artists generally do, yes. We paint And we like people to see our paintings. We like people to like our paintings. And in the end, it is very useful if they buy our paintings. After all, artists have electric bills to pay.
Well, you'll spend a few days at Beatnik Studio. You're there tomorrow from 11:30 to 7, Wednesday and Thursday. Wow, those are long days, but I can imagine that a few budding animators are going to be wanting to pick your brain.
Try not to come too late. I get a bit cranky at my age at the end of the day. And we're also at the Sierra Arts Gallery in Reno on this week, this coming weekend.
Friday through Sunday, mm-hmm, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Well, what was the greatest joy of your work? You weren't sitting in all of our living rooms as we hung out in our pajamas watching those cartoons.
No, well, perhaps it'd be more interesting to say the greatest joy in my retirement, actually, is meeting the audience. The audience was always numbers on a page, but now in my old age I get to travel around and meet the actual audience, and it's always a thrill to me when somebody comes up and says, "Ron, it was so nice of you to make those cartoons." Well, I helped make those cartoons, but I'm glad you enjoyed them. Oh, yes, and they recall their childhood sitting on their living room floor fighting with what channel to watch with their brother or sister and watching cartoons that we made.
Well, thank you for joining us. We'll continue this conversation after we're off the air and post it as an extra on our website.
Oh,
okay, Ron?
Oh, okay. Yeah, sure.
All right. Lovely to meet you. Thank you for all the joy you brought to our family.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
That is Ron Campbell, and we have more at capradio.org/insight.
We're rolling whenever you're ready.
We are ready. Okay. In the studio with me is Ron Campbell. We're continuing our conversation. He is the legendary animator who created cartoons that you and I and our kids and maybe even our parents grew up with. The list includes The Flintstones, The Jetsons, Scooby-Doo, Yogi Bear, Winnie the Pooh, so many more, and the Beatles cartoons. Were you a cartoon watcher yourself, Ron?
Oh, gosh, yes. When I was like 6 or 7 years old, I have vivid memories of watching Tom and Jerry in the movie theaters on a Saturday afternoon. And I came home one day and said to my great-grandmother, "Goodness, I just love Tom and Jerry, but where are they? Is that a real cat and a mouse running around behind the screen?" "No, Ronnie," my great-grandmother told me, and I remember vividly this moment. She said, "They are just drawings." And it was like a childish epiphany for me. It was like it hit me like a stroke from the blue. Drawings? You mean I can do drawings that come alive and run around and scatter and scream and yell and it was just amazing to me. And I'm afraid that obsessive thought stayed with me through my teenage years into my adulthood. I went to art school just in order to make drawings come alive. Mm. And I spent my life with it. Instead of building bridges and doing useful things, I just made cartoons, you know.
But you brought so much joy, so many smiles to people. And I see in the way you talk about your work that you took that back in yourself.
Well, it came from within. I wasn't really doing it to amuse other people. I was amusing myself, I'm afraid, you know, a little bit more selfish than that. But it's only later on, especially in my retirement, that I discovered that that people do really appreciate the work that we did. And by the way, it wasn't just me that created these shows that you said. I was amongst those people who I helped create those shows.
What was your first drawing? What did you first try to sketch?
Well, probably a gun or something, if you're talking, you know,
a boy thing.
Yeah,
yes.
A boy thing. But the very first cartoon I ever worked on, I worked in the only animation studio in Sydney, in Australia. I got a job there by insisting they hire me and telling them that they couldn't possibly not hire me. And it took them a while to realize it, but they finally did hire me. And they sat me down at an animation desk. I had sort of taught myself to animate, you know, rather badly at the beginning, of course. And they gave me a project of where I had to do about 100 drawings of a centipede, and every drawing had this centipede, and the centipede has 100 legs, and I was drawing 100 legs for every drawing, and hundreds of drawings of hundreds and hundreds of legs. I guess it was thousands of legs. And I sat there quietly drawing away for day after day after day. And you would think that would be the most tedious job a person could ever indulge themselves in. But I sat there and I remember, vividly remember, thinking to myself, I would pay them to let me do this. You know, that's.
How old were you at that time?
I was 19, 20. Mm.
Mm-hmm. And what was animation then? What was the technology?
Oh, it was pretty much the technology that had been designed 60, 80 years before, you know. It was it had advanced. The cameras were perhaps better. The materials were better. But it was still the basic idea. The animator draws in pencil. The assistant animator does the in-between drawings. The inkers and painters transfer the pencil drawings onto cells and paint the back of the cells and place the cells over backgrounds and film it, you know. That was the fundamental technology used by all the animation studios up until about the day I retired, you know.
Which was when? When did you retire?
2008. Mm.
Did you have a favorite cartoon to draw or a character?
No, I don't actually have a favorite. How do you choose between Scooby-Doo and Astro? Or, you know, you know, you can't do that. But I suppose I could say I have one show that I'm proudest of, mm-hmm. but not really favorites, no.
And what is that one show?
The Big Blue Marble is a television show in the 70s that we won a Peabody and an Emmy for that show. And I'm very proud of that show.
Can we talk a little bit about Yellow Submarine?
Yes, the Yellow Submarine was a feature film known the world over. The Beatles' tour de force. They gave us the music for the show, and then they went away, I'm afraid. I didn't actually get to meet the Beatles when we were making that show. I was in California working in Hollywood, and I got a telephone call in the middle of the night from Al Brodax asking if I could help out on some animation that couldn't get done in London. So the show was produced in London. It was designed by Hans Edelman. I didn't have anything to do with the design of the film. All the brilliant stuff of the film was done by other people. All I did was animate on the show. My colleague Dwayne Crowther and I animated about 12 minutes of the film.
But mostly some of that is the psychedelic design work, right?
Most of the work I was involved with was character animation of the Chief Blue Meanie and Max, the sycophantic sidekick, the Nowhere Man. None of the songs. The songs were all done in London, and the film was being made while the script was being written, and the script really didn't get finished until the film was finished. It was no way to run a railroad, but it still worked out okay. You know, the design really carried the film very strongly. That was Hans Edelman's work.
Did you get any pushback either on that film or the Beatles' Saturday morning cartoon in working in that arena with this just amazing rock and roll group that had taken the world by storm?
Pushback? Pushback implies that somebody was speaking against it or something? You know,
there were some
cranky parents who thought the Beatles' hair was too long, but...
Yeah, I think I had one of those parents.
Right, yeah. There's one generation... into the next generation. And
because I do put your work in the category of the Tooth Fairy and the Easter Bunny. And
that's what I meant about doing something useful in one's life. You know, I did involve myself a lot with the Tooth Fairy, I guess. Easter Bunny.
After 50 years, did you just decide you were done or wanted more time for yourself? What prompted you to reach the retirement decision?
Well, it's a complex set of issues, really. A big one, I suppose, is all of the people you worked with are dead or retired. It happens in life. The next generation comes along and you're part of the older generation. And it's just a sort of a sad passing of the baton, you know. And I just felt my day is done, and I was directing the very last scene of the very last film being made for the television series Ed, Edd and Eddy. And I had that distinct feeling again where I put my pencil down after completing my work on that last scene. I put my pencil down and knew that that was it. 50 years and 1 month after I was doing that scene with the centipede. Mm. And it felt like a significant moment, and that was it. And indeed, it's true. Nobody in the animation business today ever worked with me. All my colleagues are gone, deep retirement or dead.
Did you at that point have a vision of something being next? Or?
Yeah, oh sure. I'd already segued into doing paintings, so I was already doing paintings. Not as heavily, of course, as I'm doing now, but just a little bit. It actually began rather simply. A thing called eBay came up, and when I looked at it, I thought, that's funny, auctions. So I did a little sketch, and I scanned it, and I stuck it. I was just sort of learning the computer business, a little bit about the computers then. And I stuck this drawing up, and some fool offered $200 for it. And then some other fool offered $250, then $300, $350, $400, $500. And I don't remember what I sold it for, but it was hundreds of dollars for some doodle, you know, a little doodle, stupid little drawing. What is this? There's value in this? And my wife looked at it and said, you should try that again, Ronnie.
In the 50 years of your career and all of those drawings, were they all ultimately owned by the studio you were working for?
Yeah, but they had no value. There was, there was no claim, this is our drawing, you can't have it. You know, any drawing I ever did, I owned my own studio anyway. So I do remember we would store cells and paintings and all the artwork for a specific film. And we would put them up in the attic, and we'd have to air condition it to keep them. And there's expense involved with that, and the attic slowly fills up. And you say, chuck them out, you know. I mean, the only thing we were interested in was that 35-millimeter frame of film. Mm. And once that film was approved, paid for, done, gone, the artwork didn't mean anything to us. So we would throw them into the dumpster, you know, in the front there, and the dumpster would come and take them away. So one day I was walking through a show in Beverly Hills, a street show, you know, where artists are sitting around or people are sitting around selling things, pots, plants, flowers, you know, all kinds of things. And I walk up there and there's all my artwork, all my in studio's artwork being all for sale, you know, $10 for this, $5 for that. So where did that come from? Came from my dumpster, you know. And that's when I first discovered that there might be a market for this stuff, and you know. So there is.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, you know, who needs those drawings, you know, but people apparently can make a dollar out of it, so they raid dumpsters.
Learning your value in a whole different dimension.
Right.
So now you're on the road, or at least spending some time on the road. You're painting watercolors and visiting different states and different
cities.
I've
been going everywhere. Been everywhere. Yeah, traveled America.
Have you gone back to London?
Yes, I have. Liverpool, actually. Yeah, sold paintings in Liverpool at the Hard Day's Night Hotel gallery. And
again, you must be met with such joy and warmth. I look at you and I'm sorry, I just want to smile. I want to give you a hug and say thank
you. Goodness me.
So the painting is focused, at least the paintings here while you're in Sacramento, are focused on the Beatles cartoons. What else
well,
are you painting?
Well, yeah, they're focused on the Beatles because the Beatles, you know, spread over into the music business, not just the cartoon business. But I do have a lot of paintings based on other cartoons that I've been involved with. If you asked me to do a drawing of Bugs Bunny, I could do a drawing of Bugs Bunny, but I wouldn't bother because—and I wouldn't do it— because I didn't work on Bugs Bunny. But if I worked on the Rugrats, I'd do a drawing of Chucky for you, you know. And children come up and they ask me to do Bugs Bunny. I say no, but I will do Scooby-Doo for you, you know.
Do you have a list? Can you recite the cartoon list? Or do you have to look on a piece of paper because the list is so long?
Sometimes I'm shocked that I worked on something or other. My colleague Scott Siegelbaum told me once that I worked on Yogi Bear. I didn't know I didn't.
I see it here on my paper.
Yeah, I argued with him, and then he went on the computer and found out that I had credits on Yogi Bear on so many different episodes. And I don't have any memory of it. Vaguely. And now that I'm told that I did work on it, I can sort of vaguely remember it now. But, you know, 50 years is a very long time. And the brain deteriorates as the years go by. And one becomes forgetful a little bit. And so, yeah, I do have... I couldn't run off all the shows I've been involved with. Although I do have vivid memories of many of them, of course.
Do you have an original character that you created and named?
No, only in the blue, the big blue
big
marble.
Yeah. I think we should post a link to some of the Big Blue Marble because there might be people who aren't familiar with it.
Oh, it was a wonderful show.
Beautiful.
Yeah. It's a wonderful show.
Well, enjoy your stay in Sacramento, and
thank
then you're going to be visiting Reno as well. It's really a pleasure to meet you and to hear about some of the great adventures that you gave all of us.
Okay, thank you, Beth.
And that is Ron Campbell.
That was Ron Campbell.
That was.